This is a great midterm exam type question. What style is the Haydn reflective of? What style is the Beethoven reflective of? Well, the Haydn's easy. Haydn's Symphony 88 is a brilliant example of what we have come to know as the Viennese classical style. It exhibits the three essential aspects of classicism: clear, accessible, vocally inspired theme, carefully wrought and balanced phrases and forms, and thirdly, artistic restraint and good taste. How about the Beethoven? What style is it in? Is it in the classical style? Is it in Beethoven's style? This music, my friends, only sounds like one piece. It sounds like itself. It sounds like Beethoven's Symphony No. 5. It is a completely self-referential composition. So, not only is the musical content of Beethoven's Fifth, mode, melody, phrases, and so forth, way beyond the classical style, but the entire philosophical and aesthetic concept behind this piece, and that is individual self-expression at any price, would seem to have little, if anything, to do with the spirit of classicism. Questions we must now ask regarding our friend Herr Beethoven. What personal, professional, environmental circumstances allow someone the emotional freedom or imbue someone with the desire to so break with the aesthetic traditions of his past and present? Another way to ask the same question. What gives Beethoven the temerity to write a piece of music so far off the track, a track that served perfectly well for the great Haydn and the great Mozart? These are good questions, I think. So let us quickly examine some of the external and internal issues that shaped Ludwig van Beethoven and that allowed his revolutionary music to thrive. We begin with the French Revolution, July 14, 1789. A Parisian mob storms the city jail, the Bastille, looking for weapons. They freed 7 prisoners, killed the guards, killed the warden, killed the mayor of Paris, and then the mob paraded around Paris with the heads of the murdered guards on pikes. Lovely. And we think we live in a violent world. Within 3 years, France was proclaimed a republic, and the country was rallying against German invaders intent on returning their cousin, Louis XVI, to the throne. Between 1792 and 95, we have the Reign of Terror. The problem of what to do with the king, what to do with Louis XVI, took care of itself. He tried to flee France. He was captured. A revolutionary tribunal found him guilty and beheaded him in January of 1793. In October of 1793, his Austrian princess wife, queen, the sister of Joseph II, the Habsburg emperor, Marie Antoinette, is guillotined. Around this time, a young and obscure artillery lieutenant, Napoleon Bonaparte, has begun his rise through the ranks. It is hard for us to fathom today the magnificence, the impact, and the sheer degree of change engendered by the French Revolution. The French Revolution, unlike the Russian or Chinese revolutions of the 20th century, occurred in what was in many ways the most advanced country of the day. France was the center of the intellectual movement of the Enlightenment. French science led the world. French books were read everywhere. French was a kind of international spoken language in which the educated and aristocratic circles communicated. I would remind you, when I read you that obsequious letter that Bach had written to Christian Ludwig, the Margrave of Brandenburg, I noted that that letter had been written in French. You want to talk to the aristocrats? You got to talk the language the aristocrats talk. And that would have been French. France was also the most powerful country in Europe. It may also have been the wealthiest. With a population of some 24 million, the French were the most numerous of all European peoples under a single government. French exports to Europe were larger than those of Great Britain. It is said that half the gold pieces in circulation in Europe were French. Europeans in the 18th century were in the habit of taking ideas from France.